Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BikeRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Nicholas Snow. He is author of Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. Nicholas is a journalist, author, actor, radio and television host, singer-songwriter, LGBT civil rights activist, and a world-renowned openly gay, openly HIV-positive advocate for HIV testing and safer sex. This is told in his riveting new Written as He Lived It, well-reviewed, Living Powerfully with HIV memoir, Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. From Hollywood to Bangkok to Bali and beyond, including Kuala Lumpur and Palm Springs, with profound expansion to Singapore, Mumbai, and throughout all of Asia, and ultimately in 21 languages across the globe, Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart could easily be titled Eat, Pray, Disclose. In A Life Positive, Nicholas's life-affirming story of courage empowers people to save their own lives and the lives of those they love. For more information, you can visit lifepositivebook.com or also visit www.nicholassnowlive.com. And Nicholas is also on Facebook and Twitter. And I do have links to both websites and also have his Facebook and Twitter handles listed in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Nicholas to the show. Good day, Nicholas. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. I really appreciate it.
Well, it is my pleasure. This is such an important topic, one that I'm really happy to be able to share with our listeners. And your story is riveting, like I said in the introduction, you know. I mean, you lay it out on the line in your book, you know. But that's a good thing.
Well, I think that most people really want to make a difference with their lives, and that's what we're consistently seeking to do. I think that's why people find spiritual paths and volunteer and become involved politically. And so for me, it's part of an ongoing process in which I try to use my own life to make a difference. And that's what I like to inspire people to do with my story, even though there's a more specific focus about inspiring HIV testing and related issues. But the fundamental thing that I think I seek to do is inspire people to identify and follow their dreams in a way that makes a difference for others.
Yeah. I mean, truly, that's what, for me, that's what, you know, really life is all about, is to be able to live a life that, you know, like you say, inspires others. I mean, that really is what kind of makes us live on beyond our little measly earthly existence, is the ability for what we've done to make a difference beyond our existence.
Precisely. It's about, leaving a legacy. Many people do that with their children, with their artistic and professional accomplishments on the planet, you know, even by walking down to the voting booth and casting your ballot. It's all of us can and do leave a lasting impact on the world, whether we know it or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to start. I think one of the best places to start is with, you know, talking about the circumstances that led to you becoming HIV positive. Now, you know, from what I read in your book, you know, this, you know, you up till that point, you were very conscious of, you know, of sexual practices, but obviously that created a huge turning point for you. So if you wouldn't mind sharing just a little bit of the circumstances that surrounded, you know, that particular moment in time.
Well, certainly. Well, you know, my experience is a human experience, and I had been really diligent about maintaining my commitment to safer sex practices throughout my adult life. And in August of 2007, I had a rare slip in my safer sex behavior, and in that encounter, I became HIV positive. And when I look at what led me to make that decision to have unsafe sex, there's basically four reasons I can come up with. One of them is I had a false sense of security about remaining HIV negative. So far into the epidemic, I was living in a city that had a high incidence of HIV infection, but I was unaware of that. I was depressed and not taking as good care of myself at the time. And I was also with someone who said and believed that he was HIV negative. And none of those are good reasons, but they are all human reasons. So that was in August of 2007. It could have happened anywhere in the world. For me, it happened to have happened in Thailand, where I was living and working as a foreign correspondent, also acting on movies and in TV and writing for various English language publications. And I've also been openly gay in the media for almost 30 years, actually 30 years, now exactly 30 years, and had been in Hollywood and activism. And so I had a high profile, I guess you could put that in quotes, relative to most people. I had a high profile. And I decided that, well, let me backtrack a little bit. So about 50% of the time when someone becomes infected with HIV, they will develop a severe flu-like illness, which is called acute HIV infection. And this happens about half the time. So the other half of the time, someone could be exposed to HIV, not get sick, not know that they've been exposed, and continue on with their life. And in both instances, untreated and unprotected, people can expose others. So I did end up getting a severe flu-like illness. It was unlike anything I'd ever had. And I ultimately went to talk to a doctor about this. And after a variety of questions, it was discussed that I might have become HIV positive. At the time, I was not at a free testing site, and I didn't have the money to pay for the sort of HIV test that is done right after someone is exposed. That is a more expensive test. So I kind of just left the doctor in denial and in shock. But over the next few months, I considered the fact that I could have become HIV positive, and I decided to start the new year out with knowing it. So on January 3rd of 2008, at an anonymous testing site in Bangkok, Thailand, I tested HIV positive. And I was with two friends at the time. And within a couple of hours, I realized that I would go public with my story, which I began to do so almost immediately and anonymously on the websites where men seek to meet other men for sex, for dating, for human connection. So I went to those sites and I deleted the profiles that identified me, and I replaced them with profiles that did not overtly identify me, but if you knew me and you read my description and location and a little bit more, you could probably guess that it was me. But I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go on the record as being HIV positive until I could tell other, tell my family, and make sure I was in a good economic place to absorb any professional repercussions that could come to me in as a result of coming out HIV positive in Asia. So that's sort of the foundation of what happened. And in May of 2008, I began to write a very detailed, written as I lived it, journal of the whole process of my decision to come out publicly. And I wrote that for over 2 years. And it's that journal that has been adapted into the book Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. But a major event in the book is a press conference I had in October of 2008, disclosing what had happened to me. This took place at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Thailand. And but it is a riveting story. I don't mean to be biased, but because it's written as I've lived it, and I'm laying my heart and soul on the pages every day and talking about my greatest fears and weaknesses and mistakes and experience, strength, and hope, it's just, I think it's a powerful experience for the reader.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the fact that you did it in the journal form, you know, in the day-to-day type of challenges, for me, that was, I think, one of the biggest values of the book, because I believe, you know, that anyone who goes through the process of finding out they're positive, and then all of the emotions and the challenges and the fears, like you said, all of those things really play out, and I think what you've done is you've really kind of made it okay for people to be able to accept and feel that, you know, what they're feeling isn't unusual, you know, and that you know, that there's hope.
There certainly is hope, and you know. And 30 years ago, people who discovered that they had HIV at that point, actually, they didn't know they had HIV. HIV hadn't been discovered 30 years ago, but I don't think it had. I don't know the precise year, but nevertheless, people were finding out that they were sick when they were on the verge of death. And it was a death sentence. And now people can live long and healthy lives with HIV as a chronic manageable illness. And I'm a good testimony to that, because the only HIV-related illness I've ever had was that flu that I talked about. Because I was able to start taking antiretroviral medication when medically indicated. What's changed since 2008, when I was tested positive, is that now, when someone becomes when someone is learned to be HIV positive, the doctors in most cases will start that person on the antiretroviral medication immediately, for two reasons. One of which is that in most cases that medication will render that person's viral load undetectable, which means that the HIV does not progress in the body and transition into AIDS. But the other reason is that the science has shown that someone who is treated on modern medication is up to 96% less likely to transmit the virus. When I was diagnosed HIV positive in 2008, there was a different criteria in place about when to start someone on medication. They would wait for someone's T cells to drop below 500 and then start them on medication. but which I did in 2010, and within a couple of months, my viral load was undetectable. So people I think are afraid to know their HIV status for a whole variety of reasons. But one of them is that they think that they can't do anything about it. And there's actually a very simple treatment available now, and it's very easy to have anonymous and confidential HIV tests. And with the dramatic expansion of the United States healthcare system and the passing of the Affordable Care Act, and their access to treatment, at least in the United States, is easier than it's ever been. So from a pure life-saving scientific level, it's really important for people to know their HIV status. Another reason people don't want to know is because of the stigma that is still very powerful in the world today against those of us who are living with HIV or AIDS. You know, I'm living with HIV. I'm not living with AIDS, and I have to tell you that if I ever do have an AIDS diagnosis, I will have to go through a whole other level of acceptance, mm-hmm. because having AIDS is very different than living powerfully with HIV. Although there are many people that are living powerfully with AIDS as well. You know, it's just that I'm fortunate enough that my HIV has not progressed that far, and it may never do so because of the medication that I'm on.
Yeah, they're two different levels of, they're just basically two different levels of what you would have to deal with. And now, one of the things that, you know, you kind of briefly mentioned, you talked about fears, and that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask. You know, when you decided, you know, that you were going to write this book, you know, and, you know, with being a, you know, figure who's been kind of out there, or, you know, that is, you know, seen, you know, in many different kinds of media formats, what were your fears about, you know, I mean, because, you know, you said when you went to those profiles, you kind of went and did it a little bit anonymously, you know, so, but there was obviously a point when that shifted, and it was like, okay, now I'm going to be completely out there and also be an advocate for, you know, safe sex practices and you know, HIV and AIDS awareness. So what were some of your fears about, you know, taking that one step, going from, you know, semi-anonymity to being, you know, full-on out there?
Well, as I answer that question, I guess I want to talk a little bit more about the different things that motivated me to write the journal. So,
okay.
After I became HIV positive, but before I had confirmed it, someone I had known in my life for a long time confided in me that in recent years he had also become HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, HIV and AIDS had stopped being real to me because even though decades before I'd lost loved ones, I had participated in ACT UP demonstrations and had even received college credit for doing public speaking on the issue, HIV just became more of a concept than a reality to me. And which I think led to what is sometimes described as safer sex fatigue. But I was really stunned to hear this information from my friend, because I wondered that if I knew the story of someone who had fairly recently been exposed to HIV, if that would have been a wake-up call for me, and if I would have behaved any differently. Anytime I talk about this, I do say that I respect an individual's right to disclose their HIV status if, when, and to whom they choose. you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not faulting my friend for not telling me. But I kept wondering, would have my behavior been any different? So I immediately wanted to reach the people in my life with my mistake to hopefully impact their own lives and their own decision-making processes, whether it be to find out their status and increase their adherence to safer sex, or to find out perhaps they were HIV positive and to get treatment. Another thing that happened was I went to another friend who was and is very involved in the activist community to talk about my plans. He thought that it was a terrible idea for me to go public, and thought that people would think that I was doing it because I was attention seeking. Well, in some levels, I was attention seeking, but he thought that my motivation was much more self-serving. And in a way, it is. I want to make a difference with my life. That's my greatest passion and goal. So if I'm making decisions that are about fulfilling my own life's contributions, that is self-serving. But a crux of what I seek to do in my life is to be of service to others, which other people can debate all they want. I know in my heart that that's what motivates me. But anyway, this friend basically dropped me, refused to talk about the subject anymore. And I found myself basically not only sort of a lone ranger in Thailand as someone that was going to go public with my status, but I found myself sort of dropped by this person. And I don't really know. I don't really know to what extent if or when he spoke to other people about me. But basically, among the activist community, at least among some of the activist community, there was this shared belief that I was using this for my own fame and fortune. So I wanted to create a very truthful account of what I was doing, when, why, and how. And another really powerful part of the book is to the extent I went to build coalitions with other individuals and groups that were part of the fight against HIV/AIDS in the region. And endeavor to use my story not just to call attention to me, but to call attention to the broader issues, and to use my media spotlight to empower others. So writing the journal was to I realized it was unsafe for me to speak to certain people that I didn't have the support from them, and they were in fact judging me. So I wrote the journal to help maintain my own focus, to maintain my own commitment, and to help manifest my future. It was a real tool. It was a tool of self-propulsion as much as it was and is a document of what was going on every day. And so the whole process was about, I think, facing and overcoming fear. One of the things that ultimately happened as part of my journey is I worked to create a worldwide music video campaign that was ultimately subtitled in 20 languages and has aired on national television in one country in its entirety, and received significant national television exposure in another country. And that music video is called The Power to Be Strong. And I ultimately created that as well. So I, as a media activist, I just kept doing one thing after another, figuring out, well, what are new and different and more creative ways to call attention to the issue? And the lyrics of that song are all about moving through fear and being powerful and having the life that we want. So this has been an amazing journey. I guess to throw something else in it is that because I was a freelance journalist in Thailand, self-employed, I no longer had access to health insurance. I had let my own insurance lapse, and I didn't have access to health insurance. So when I did need to start taking medication in Thailand, because of my volunteerism, the head of the Thai Red Cross AIDS Research Center qualified me for a scholarship through the Princess Fund to pay for my medication. So I was able to start taking medication when I needed to, but I ultimately decided to return to Palm Springs, California, where I previously lived, because I had personal and professional connections here, and because I needed to access healthcare, I needed to become part of the group of the large group of Americans that would benefit from the Affordable Care Act. So I ultimately returned to Palm Springs, California, where I am a grateful client of Desert AIDS Project, which is also included in this book. So the book is the book really is a global sort of adventure with uncanny twists and turns, in which I'm often living on the edge, fueled simply by faith and perseverance.
Yeah, that is a great way of describing it. Well, you know, now you mentioned the song. Now, is that the anthem, the power to be strong?
Yes. The single is, I know you're going to play it in a couple minutes, but the single is available on iTunes. It's available worldwide in online music stores. But the music video is available for viewing and sharing, subtitled in 20 languages at youtube.com/power to be strong. And if I forget to say so later in the show, my primary website, nicholassnowlive.com, has links to everything, my music video, my radio show, my blog, my book. It's all available at nicholassnowlive.com. But just to give you a little bit more information about the song, I worked with music producer Bruno Brugnano, who is he's the equivalent of an Academy Award-winning, Grammy Award-winning music producer in Thailand. And he produced the song. And then I worked with a leading Thai film director to direct the song, direct the music video. O Natapon is his name. And Ayano Kamira does great backup vocals on the song. And the translation was done by people I met through social networking. Some of them I knew in person, but the majority of people who came up with the subtitles for the different versions of my song are people that I met around the world. So the song is subtitled in Swahili and Afrikaans and Japanese and Chinese and Hindi and you name it. It ended up being really powerful.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed, you know, the single, you know, and, you know, the anthem. So I am going to want to play that. What I want to do is, since we're about halfway through the show, I want to take just a real quick break. We'll go ahead and exit to the single there, and then I just have one spot. And if anybody would like to ask Nicholas any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And then also, if you're listening in the chat room and would like to ask a question, feel free to call in. So I'm going to go ahead right now, and we're going to play the anthem, The Power to Be Strong, and we'll be right back.
lies find the way. Knowledge is power, turn the night into day. You're not alone, dance with me.
Again, that was the anthem, The Power to Be Strong, and the message, get tested and live longer and be strong. And again, you can find out, you can see the whole video by going to YouTube, go to YouTube and then / The Power to Be Strong. It's got a great video there. And again, thank you for joining us today. My very special guest is Nicholas Snow. He is author of Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. And again, in the show page description, I have a direct link to Nicholas's webpage, which is nicholassnowlive.com, and also have his Facebook and Twitter handles there as well. So be sure to join him on both of those platforms. So with that, we're back, Nicholas.
Well, thank you for playing that for your listeners.
Well, you know, my pleasure. I really enjoyed listening to that. I mean, to me, you know, yes, it has the message of, you know, the HIV getting tested, but to me, it's also very empowering. I mean, it, you know, beyond, you know, the message of HIV, it's just in life, you know, just the whole idea of being empowered and that we matter and that, what, you know, we should
you know, do what we can to make our life experience the best possible.
Well, I'm glad that that resonates to you that way, because that's what it meant for me. And I think the book is the same way. It's like the they're like, I consider this book a self-help inspirational guide to life, even though it's shared in the context of my personal story. But the people who are reviewing it are sort of picking up on that as well. So I'm really glad that it resonates for you. Like the first verse, open your heart, fill your heart, and open your heart. Sometimes I get confused with my, open your heart, feel your light, grow within, move through your fear, take a step and begin. You're not alone, dance with me. So it's like, this is all about people really opening their heart to themselves and facing their fears and giving themselves permission to follow their dreams and move on.
I agree very much. Now, you before the break, we talked a little bit, you mentioned a little bit about that one friend that kind of dropped out, you know. And in your book, you have a couple references here and there to interacting with people pre-positive and post-positive. And I'm wondering if, you know, what has your experience been with people, you know, who are in your circle, you know, either, you know, family, friends, or even just acquaintances? Is there any, what kind of changes or realizations have you seen in people? Did people shift a lot? Did some fall, like the other, that one person, fall by the wayside after you let it be known that you were positive?
Well, you know, that speaks to the broader message of coming out. So coming out about anything, you know, I think everybody has things they know about themselves or they discover about themselves that they sort of long to share with others, so we can be our fully integrated, authentic selves with our friends, our family, and our loved ones as we go through life. And I have had a lot of experience about that, because I came out as a gay man in the early to mid 80s, and I ended up being on staff of the very first National Coming Out Day, which happened October 11th, 1988, and happens every year. But the creators of National Coming Out Day talk about how basically coming out is an act of love. So if we decide to share our true selves with other people, we're doing it because we love ourselves and we love them and we want to be closer and more authentic in the world. And there are, you know, everyone brings their own belief system and their own agenda to any situation. So I did have a lot of my relationships did change in my life, but I cannot say that that's because of any anti-HIV or AIDS sentiment. But my mom, you know, basically, in many ways, this book is a love letter to my mother. And I don't know how far along the book you've gotten, but I'm not going to give away some of the dramatic twists regarding that. But a lot of the book was about, if there was one person that's sort of the focal point of who I was going to come out to and how and first, it was my mother. And when I did come out to my mother, she was very loving. She said, "I'm sorry that you have to experience this in your life, but I love you and I always will." You know, that's a paraphrase, but she was very supportive. And in the book, I actually quote people who contacted me to talk about what the telling of my story had meant to them. So another function of the book was, I had people that felt like I was doing this to be self-aggrandizing, and because I was perceived to be one of great hubris. So I really wanted to document authentically where my heart and soul were when I was going through this process. And it was always very empowering for me when people took the time to let me know how my story was impacting them. And that was strengthening to me. So by telling my story, I actually invited some support and love that I really needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and I could understand that, you know, very clearly. And, you know, and to me, it's interesting, you know, the people who felt that, you know, maybe your work was, you know, for your own self-promotion and that kind of thing. And you know, and I've had other authors who have written about themselves, and, you know, and I often tell people who, if you want to tell a unique story, tell your story, you know, and what's interesting is they too sometimes have gotten that that response that it's like, well, you know, in a way, like, who are you to be telling your story, and what makes you so important, you know, that you think it's worth reading, you know? You know, to me, I'm fascinated by that, because it's like, you know, to put yourself out there. And in your book, I mean, you not only talk about the, you know, the challenges of HIV, but you also, I mean, like you said, you on the edge. I mean, you know, you go through financial challenges, professional challenges, you know, I mean, it's the whole gamut of life, you know, that really takes bravery. I mean, it really takes courage to be able to put that out there and open yourself up.
Well, I have, as of today, which is October 27th, 2014, I have basically 13 and a half years of recovery in a particular 12-step program. And I refer to this book as part 12-step program, fourth step inventory, part reality show on paper. And in 12-step programs, a fourth step inventory, it refers to taking a fearless and searching moral inventory of oneself, and learning to promptly admit when we are wrong, and to actively seek to make amends when to do so is possible. And so in the book, I feel there are some people that have taken exception to some of the things that I've written in my book, people that have been singled out in the book. If I had wanted to write a book that was to disparage other people or cast other people in a poor light, it would have been a very different book. There's so many things that I could have said, and so many ways I could have presented what actually happened that would cause other people to look rather poorly. But that wasn't the intent of my book, and I actually did my best to be as loving as absolutely possible to people that I was writing about. And my editor thinks that I'm harder on myself in that book than she could even believe. So part of it was just a raw, edited, you know, the book is edited, but the truth isn't. I mean, the ultimate journal ended up being over 1,000 pages, single-spaced, typed in a Word document. And the finished book is just over 400 pages. So the book has been edited to move out things that were repetitive or to be more focused in the way that the story evolves. But it's not been edited for truth. It's been edited to make other people look better than they might have behaved, or to eliminate things that transpired. But I did not edit things that were, I didn't edit things out to make myself look better. I've sort of put my whole humanity on the table.
Yeah, you did. You did very much so. And you know, I could tell when reading, you know, that, you know, you really took care in, you know, whenever there was something that might have been disparaging, you know, to kind of mask who it was. But then you also were very open, you know, if people were very supportive and cooperative and helpful in your journey, you really, you know, brought them to the forefront too, and as I think it should have been.
Oh, certainly. It's about celebrating everyone. And, you know, the bottom line is, even though I'm very healthy today, you know, no one gets out of life alive. And I've always been drawn to make a difference. Now, when I first became an activist, I did have this sort of unhealthy quest for attention, but it was driven by two different factors. One of them was, I really had a complete absence of self-esteem. I felt guilty for having ever having taken up oxygen on the planet. And I don't really know why I had that complete self-loathing. Part of it must have been related to growing up in a homophobic world where I was bullied. But there are other factors involved. But the other aspect of it is, you know, I was a communications major in college at Arizona State University, where we learned the power of communication. And also at that time in my life, in the early 80s, my best friend committed suicide. My great-grandmother, who was in her 90s, passed away. And people that I had come out of the closet, I was rebelling not only from my childhood family, but from my Republican roots, because, you know, I'm actually a very proud participant in the Democratic Party, and I have been most of my adult life. So kind of lost my train of thought. My train of thought. So I'll let you redirect with a question.
No, that's okay. I mean, it was, you know, talking really about, you know, that activist and having the voice, you know.
That's right. Well, you know, I realized the power of my voice, that I did have the ability to make a difference. So every single day, I wanted to make a difference with my life. And, you know, in long-term participation in 12-step programs, I'd like to think that I've worked through the demons that made sort of drove sort of the unhealthier manifestations of my public life, and have put me in a more solid, service-oriented focus on who I am and what I do. But ultimately, I'm not really good at this, but ultimately I need to remember that what you think of me is none of my business.
Yeah, I know that.
Because I do not have a thick skin. I do take criticism personally. So I've had to develop a strategy around that. And one of the things that I've decided to do is to not participate in conversations that are about me but not with me. And to not participate in conversations that are with me but that are conducted in a disrespectful way.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is so important, you know, and I understand, you know, that whole, you know, criticism and, you know, is when one of the things that I too had to kind of develop that little bit thicker of a skin, because you know criticisms did tend to kind of stab me in the heart every now and then. It's like, oh, what do you mean, you know? And until I really realized that you know, criticisms often are, you know, the judgment of someone else, you know, someone else's perception of, you know, a situation or even their perception of me, which has, you know, absolutely no basis in reality for me, you know. So, I mean, I actively, you know, control as much as I can, you know, the circle of who and what gets my attention, you know, and anything in the realm of negativity just doesn't fly with me. I mean, you know, as a fellow Blog Talk host, you know that, you know, every now and then people can get kind of nasty, and I just, you know, I have my boot button and I just kick them out. It's like, there's, you know, this is a place for positive, you know, a place for positivity, and, you know, negativity is not allowed. And then I just, you know, anybody who tries to bring that into my little realm here, you know, it's like, you know, that's just not welcome, you know. And so I understand that, but it can be a challenge sometimes especially when you're a, you know, an empathetic, compassionate person, like obviously you are.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned my Blog Talk Radio show. That's something that I created when I got back to the United States, because I had been invited to be on two other Blog Talk Radio shows as the result of my activism. And so I spent about 6 months studying the whole platform, and I launched my podcast in July of 2012. And since then, I've had 1.65 million downloads of my podcast in just in about 27 months. So, and in my show, I'm consistently forwarding the same key messages of honoring and expressing the truth of your life to the people whom you influence. And the slogan for my show is connecting the circuitry of humanity.
Mm, I like that. Yeah.
And what I did too, I had live callers. I had live calls, and I would open the chat room. But what I found out was that most people that called in were about grandstanding or making prank calls or pretending to be someone that they weren't. And while there were interesting people in the chat room, because my show is often LGBT themed, I would have homophobic gay bashers coming into the chat room. And what I ultimately learned, though, is that most people listen to my podcast after the fact. So while it's often produced live and people can listen live, I don't really focus on live interaction with my audience while the show is happening. I respond to them on my Facebook page and if they direct tweet me, but when I produce the show, I'm really focused on the guests, and I don't I pay attention to callers, and I do have the ability to screen a call if someone happens to call in, but for the most part, because that creates a much more volatile type of show, I decided not to really focus a lot on the live callers.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, very much. And I had really shifted greatly away from that. I mean, most of my shows are very much like what we had today, you know, that type of thing. And you know, and I know, I mean, I've had, you know, the gay slanderous types of people. And again, you know, I have my boot button and they just, you know, they're gone, you know, the instant to try and say anything like that to me. So, I mean, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, controlling the environment. So anyway, but, well, gosh, we're down to the last 5 minutes here, Nicholas. It's really flown by. I'd like to maybe close in the few minutes that we have remaining. Maybe if you wouldn't mind sharing, you know, just some of your thoughts and maybe some of the things that the listeners can do to be able to, you know, become more informed and more active and be able to, you know, get the message out.
Okay, so one sort of great worldwide website for information about HIV/AIDS resources in local communities is the body, thebody.com, T thebody.com, thebody.com. Also, if you Google the name of your city and anonymous HIV testing, you can find often that information. You know, on a broader level, I just want to say that I'd like to ask the listeners to ask themselves, are my spiritual beliefs limiting? So my spiritual philosophy has evolved. And basically, I articulated as this. I honor any part of any teaching that celebrates the universal equality of humanity. And I reject any part of any teaching that in order to be right has to make other people wrong. So I'd like to encourage people to look at their own spiritual philosophy and ask themselves, is it limiting or is it expansive? Does it punish or does it include? Does it celebrate? Is it life-affirming? That has been helpful to me. And one of the things that I write in my book is that I encourage people, I say, fight for the life and the world of your dreams until you have no life left in this world, for then you will have truly lived.
Wow, that's great, yeah. Well, thank you for those resources. And also, you know, it's very, very nice to know that also at the back of your book, you also have resources listed as well. So that's, to me, that's a valuable asset to the book as well. So, well, Nicholas, this has really been a joy. It's been a joy having you on my show. I really appreciate you spending the time and chatting with us today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and thank you for all you do and the people that you spotlight. Everything I've talked about is ultimately linkable from NicholasSnowLive.com, and I really appreciate the time you took to have me on.
You're very welcome. And again, everyone, I do have a direct link to the website NicholasSnowLive.com in the show page description. And also in the show page description are Nicholas's Facebook and Twitter handles. So feel free to join him there if you use those platforms. And everyone, I want to thank you again for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/ByteRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at ByteRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BiteRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.